Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to the morning show here on this beautiful Wednesday, May 23rd, and this is 88.5 KRFY. We are listener-supported community radio for North Idaho, and I'm Susie Prez, one of the hosts this morning, and I'm sitting across from my co-host. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning. I'm Chris Bessler, your co-host over here. Susie, how are you doing today?
I'm fine, way over here. And we have a really interesting and exciting show for you this morning. Our first guest will be Bill Ellis. He's the technical consultant for Citizens Against Newport Silicone Smelter, also known as CANSS or C-A-N-S-S. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Susie.
It's nice to have you, and we'll get into all of the aspects about CANSS. There's a lot of questions rolling around, and we want to hear all about it. We have a second guest that will come in just for a little bit. It's some folks from the Bridge at Sandpoint who are putting together a once-a-month breakfast for veterans called Breakfast for the Brave.
And that's a pretty cool new event that's coming along.
Yeah. And Tina Mauser will be here to tell us all about that towards the end of the show. But we might as well get started on something.
Well, yeah, let's get started on, as is our want here, we usually like to talk about the weather, which is glorious right now. But how's it look for the next few days?
You want to hear about the weather. Okay. So currently we're at 59 degrees. It's going to warm up today to 81. Wow. Slight chance of showers, then slight chance of thunderstorms. What's the difference? I don't know. Well, where was it yesterday or the day before we had that torrential downpour? That was Monday, right?
Yeah.
That was something else. I don't know if you had it over in Newport, but...
Not where I was, in Blanchard area.
Oh, no. Blanchard, yeah. Anyways, that was something. We'll keep going here. 40% chance of showers tonight, low of 55. Tomorrow, 40% chance of showers, high of 79, warm showers. Thursday night, 20% chance of thunderstorms, then partly cloudy, and a low of 54. Kind of the same thing going into Friday. 20% chance of thunderstorms, high of 81. It's just intermittent, this and that.
Overall, pretty nice. And it's just so glorious out there right now with the springtime happening and the flowers going off and all the greenery coming on. So it's beautiful outside right now.
It really explodes this time of year.
It does.
With the green, yeah.
Yeah, it makes you realize how fortunate we are to live here. A few other things happening outside. The sunrise this morning was at 5:06 a.m. It'll set at 8:19 p.m. tonight. We're getting those long days now. And over the past week, we've gained 18 minutes of daylight per day because the days keep getting longer until we get to the summer solstice in June. And we're officially over full pool level now on Lake Ponderé. It's 2062.73 feet. As of yesterday, it's come up 3.72 feet in the past 7 days. So we're now into the projected flooding that we've been getting for the lake. There's so much water up in the mountains that is coming down, and snowpack coming down as water into the lake now. And I understand there's an awful lot of water in the Clark Fork River, which is our main tributary to the lake. So we can expect some flooding with the lake for sure this year.
I wonder if that torrential downpour that we had on Monday affects that overall picture.
Well, you know, that those downpours, when you get them, they're very localized. So it certainly can. The warm rain is what brings the snowpack down fastest of all, actually, when that occurs. Other things going on?
Susie. Well, I want to mention that everyone is invited to a free showing of the award-winning documentary movie, and that's this Friday, and the movie's called Rumble. It's KRFY's way of saying thank you to our community for being so supportive. And this documentary will be Friday, May 25th, 7:30 at the Panada. It's just, again, our way of thanking everyone. It's called Rumble, The Indians Who Rock the World. And, you know, I've heard the music alone is pretty great. So we're hoping to fill the Panada with folks that want to see a great movie and, you know, be thanked for being supporters of KRFY.
Yeah, it sounds like a really cool movie. I've seen the trailer to it, and it's citing some of the some really big names in music who have contributed as Indigenous people to our music history here. I wanted to make a correction, actually. I read off the wrong numbers for the lake level. Lake level actually is, it hit the a minor flooding stage. It's at 2063.8 feet. So we're actually already into flooding. I was looking at last week's numbers when I cited those just a moment ago. So folks that are out on the lake should definitely be slowing down. Wake damage is really going to hurt a lot of docks that are now being flooded. So if you're out on the lake, slow down for that. And also watch out for driftwood in the water.
Driftwood. It's big
right now. There's a lot of that coming through as well. So there's a lot of safety hazards out there. And what else has been going on? You mentioned Rumble just is coming. I wanted to mention a neat thing that's happening this weekend. The Kinnixu Land Trust is going to be taking guided walks into the Pine Street Woods. That's the 160 acres. It's just to the west of town off of Pine Street that the Kinnixu Land Trust is looking to acquire as a community forest. And if you're interested in taking a walk on the property and seeing what it's all about, there are guided walks that are going to be happening for 4 weekends, starting this weekend, May 26th, on Saturday. It's free. You just got to go sign up. Go to pinestreetwoods.com or kinnixu.org to go to the Kinnixu Land Trust website and sign up to take a walk up on the Pine Street Woods, see what that's all about.
That will be fun. It's time to do that, isn't it? Sounds good. Another thing that's happening tonight, the Idaho Department of Lands is holding public hearings on the Burlington Northern Santa Fe, or BNSF, railway application to construct a second train bridge across Lake Ponderay and Sand Creek. The first in a, let's see, it's at 8 a.m. at the Ponderay Event Center. And the so there's two sessions of public hearings. The first one is happening right now at the Ponderay Event Center. And the second one is this evening at 6 p.m. at the Sandpoint Middle School gym. So if you want to make comments or you want to learn more about this application that's going in from BNSF, now's the time to start getting involved.
Yeah, it will be a big impact on our town to have a second railroad bridge both be constructed and be put into use. And with that, I think I should mention there's a ton more going on in town. And as always, you can go to the KRFY website and see the complete community calendar. That's KRFY.org or on sandpointonline.com, which provides the calendars. So you can check on all these events we're talking about and a ton more because there's always a lot going on in our town. And with that, let's turn to today's guest. Again, we have with us Bill Ellis. He's the technical consultant with the Citizens Against Newport Silicon Smelter, otherwise known as CANS. Again, Bill, thanks for being here.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for the opportunity.
And to start with, tell us what CANS is all about.
Well, it's an organization that was put together by local people in Northeast Washington and Northwest Idaho. Basically, the Newport, Old Town, Blanchard, and now Sandpoint and Spokane areas. These were just a bunch of people who did not know the smelter was coming, were suddenly slapped aware of it last October. And we mobilized as fast as we could to put an organization together and begin expressing to our leadership that we are completely against a smelter being brought here. And that's about how it started.
Okay. Well, let's back up to the what is the smelter and what's that whole proposal all right. about?
Well, a silicon, any smelter, this is a silicon smelter. All smelters are among the dirtiest of what you call heavy industry. Throughout the world. So there's nothing special except that they're bringing one here to the forest. So it basically melts down sand and then uses coal and wood to extract the oxygen from the sand, which of course burns the coal and the wood. And this leaves the silicon behind. They then cast it into large bricks and crush it, you know, and sell it to their customers. This all goes to 90% of all silicon goes to the aluminum and steel alloying industry. 10% of it goes to other things, of which computer chips and solar panels are a small fraction. So that's what it is. It anybody that burns coal, of course, brings heavy metals, sulfur, and nitrogen, you know, into the atmosphere and the local ecology. So this is a quality of life issue. If you've ever seen haze back east, where the view is obscured by industrial smoke and emissions, that's what we're looking at up here in a place where we don't have haze and we don't have acid rain. And so this is a quality of life and a health issue. These things are dangerous. We're learning more every day about the effects of sulfur and nitrogen oxides on health. And it affects children, sudden infant death, gene-motivated cancer, so to speak. It turns on genes that cause cancer. There's a lot of things. Sulfur dioxide makes sulfuric acid when it gets to the moisture in the air. And so when you breathe it, even if you don't notice it, even if it's not making you cough, it's causing little acid burns inside your lungs. And, of course, it goes into your bloodstream, and there's many other things that it can cause when it alters your blood chemistry. But there's much, much more in terms of damage to the environment. And so it's pretty important to us that everybody is aware, and that's our main task is public awareness.
So the company that is proposing this is called Hytest.
Yes.
Hytest San. I think they've actually changed their name to Hytest Silicon. And the proposal is to place this in Newport.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe 186 acres that the company has purchased from either the county or the city?
That's a euphemism for gift. Yes, it's approximately between 190 and 200 acres, depending on which report you read. But you're approximately correct. They, of course, as a foreign corporation, not licensed to operate even in Washington State, they were given $300,000 as a donation from the Economic Development Committee, I guess, or commission. And then they turned around.
There's actually a grant from the state.
A grant from the state, yeah.
$300,000. Yes.
Correct, yeah. And so the $300,000 then was used to purchase the land, which is pretty much a gift, if you ask me. They gave them the money and they said, we'll charge you that much for the land. So nobody got anything out of it. And the state, the county and the state paid almost $700,000 for that land. So they gave it away for half price, basically, is what happened with the land.
So what was the motivation for this giveaway, as you say?
Well, the upfront, you know, the public reason for it was, to create jobs. You know, let's find the dirtiest, filthiest, nastiest jobs we can and bring it here. Our position is that it's because the Public Utilities PUD division or department, I always get all these acronyms
it's
confused.
A utilities district.
District, yes, yeah. I'm sorry. They're running out of customers for their power with the paper mill, Ponderé Newsprint, I believe
yes.
They're called. They're kind of iffy as to the future. Where they're operating, people aren't reading newspapers. There's less need for newsprint, and that's their only product. And they're right now, I think, using something like 2/3 of the output from the hydro dam at Box Canyon. So PUD is desperate to find a new customer for all of their power, and that's what this smelter does. It burns up. They're estimating 105 megawatts, and that's like a continuous. So when you talk megawatt hours, you're talking many millions of megawatts, you know, per year, megawatt hours. So that's basically it. They needed a customer for their power, and they've turned down pot crow facilities. There are other options, you know, that use more power. There's some interest in the area. Like
when you say turned down, you're saying that the utility district told pot growing.
I'm sorry. Yeah, that was confusing.
They cannot have the power?
No, the county itself has taken the position that they don't want pot growers in Ponderé County. They create jobs also, but of course don't use a lot of power. So that was the problem with pot growers. And they will tell you that they have to permit anybody who's met the legal requirements, but of course they denied permitting to pot growers. So that's not really true. They have a lot of authority, the county commission. There are other industries. Bitcoin mining is now becoming a huge deal, and they're sucking up all the power in the Columbia Basin, I believe it's called, over near Moses Lake, Yakima, and so forth. And now they're interested in our area because we have all this inexpensive power, second cheapest power in the United States, right here in the Ponderé County area.
So I wanted to get back to a little bit. I mean, I eventually want to hear about the commissioners and who decided to do this and how it all came about. But I want to get back to the pollution perspective of this smelter. Are there any other smelters in this country? Because this is coming out of Canada, and you say it's one of the dirtiest industries. Mm-hmm. Are there any other examples of what this type of smelter will contribute to air quality or air degradation?
Absolutely. The most recent smelter built was in Burnsville, Mississippi. It's also a silicon smelter. You know, we have pictures of it in operation, and the view of the thing is obscured by the smoke that comes out of it. And that's just the local smoke leaking out of the building. What comes out the stack is an entirely different animal. But it's a filthy thing. So it just started up about a year and a half ago. So we can't expect to see, you know, environmental damage and health effects yet. And of course, that requires specific studies, you know, that must be funded by someone. So you won't see that for a while. Mostly it takes a few years, 5 or 10 years before you start seeing effects. Iceland has just started up two new silicon smelters, both of which have been shut down within, you know, weeks of startup because of the really bad amount of pollution and smell and degradation in the local environment. One of them, before it even got into full operation, had to be shut down, and they sold it to another company who started it up and then was shut down again by the environmental divisions in Iceland, which, you know, they're pretty famous for being strict, unlike the United States, anywhere in the United States, including Washington. So these things are really dirty, and there's a lot of newspapers in English, newspaper articles that you can find about the Iceland smelters where it's a nightmare for the locals, you know, and down in Burnsville, we don't have any real information yet because it's so new. But yeah, this will be the first one. Burnsville is east of the Mississippi, and this will be the first smelter that is in operation, I'll say, west of the Mississippi.
So this is a Canadian company, Hytest. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Why don't they put their smelter up in Canada?
There's mixed explanations for that. A lot of people in Canada don't want smelters because they've got a few of them. Mining and so forth, you know, is kind of big up there. The local community wanted it. But, of course, in America, we bought the jobs. There's, first of all, Jay Inslee spearheaded a special tax break for them.
He's the governor of Washington.
The governor of Washington, yes. A special tax break on power. So they're getting almost 4% discount on their electrical power, even though they're already at industrial rates and it's already the second cheapest power in America. And then, of course, the federal government stepped in and they will give them $125 million to locate here, which is it's about 40% of the cost of building the plant. So it's irresistible. With all this free money.
So I haven't heard that figure before. You're saying the federal government, what agency in the federal government is offering $125 million?
That's called the New Market Tax Credit. And it's from about the early 2000s. Congress passed that. And if you move into an area that you create, I think you got to create at least 100 jobs. It has to be economically depressed area. And if you do, they will give you up to 40% of the cost of your facility as a tax credit, meaning right off the top of your income tax. So that's what it's federal government. So the taxpayers of America are paying these people to come here, pollute our air and water and soil, and actually build the factory for them. Plus the power discount amounts to about $1,200,000 a year that comes straight out of the pockets of Washington taxpayers. Because, you know, somebody has to pay for the power ultimately. And if they're getting a discount, it's coming out of everybody else's pocket. There's hundreds of millions of dollars involved here. That's why they're here. We paid them to come here, or Washington did, and the federal government did.
So over time, Citizens mm-hmm. Against the Newport Silicon Smelter have found out a lot of information. I was just looking at your website and your Facebook page. The mission of CANS is to stop mm-hmm. the Hytest silicon smelter from being built in our dense rural residential area. Mm-hmm. How successful do you think you'll be?
I think always in anything like this, it depends on public awareness and public participation. Generally speaking, when you're talking this kind of money and politicians, you know, 5 years from now, let's say we brought all these jobs here, so we're great, you know. So it takes a lot of work, and you're never guaranteed. Just because everybody is against this smelter doesn't mean it won't come here. So it's going to take some remarkable participation by the local communities to convince everyone. And you've got to embarrass them, like Jay Inslee. I mean, he's a big environmentalist governor, and yet he brings the filthiest, you know, industry he can to the forest, basically, in eastern Washington. In fact, they'll have to cut down a forest to build this thing. So it's because the air is too clean here. Washington, the pollution in Washington is no more strict. The pollution control or environmental laws are no more strict than any other state in the nation. They all use the National Ambient Air Quality Standards. So if you have really clean air, you can pollute a lot and still not exceed the air quality standards. And that's what they do. They call it pollution shopping, I believe is the phrase. So they look for really clean air, and so you never exceed the law, and so you can dirty up everything to where it looks like, oh, living in Pennsylvania next to a steel mill or something, you know. So there are no real limits. Washington is just a real expensive state to get permitted. It's not very strict.
So they probably wouldn't have gotten a permit if they had gotten some land west of Spokane, because Spokane's air has that inversion, and it's not as clean as, say, the air that's really we're talking about is in Idaho.
You can argue that's true. Yeah, all the pollution is going to blow into Idaho because the prevailing winds.
It's right across the border.
Yeah, they're literally, you know, their property line is the border between states. They're right there.
Was there any part of that information that was part of the decision that...
You should be clear, there's been no decision yet. They haven't even put in the application yet.
Yeah, quite true.
So I wouldn't talk about this as some kind of fait accompli. Mm-hmm. It's still pre-application at this point.
It is. There's no permits been applied for. They have
and, also... And we're actually kind of guessing at a lot of the stuff because there hasn't been an application. And when we had the form here, we actually had a form in Sandpoint. Mm-hmm. Did you come to that? That was several months ago.
Yeah.
There were more questions than answers.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think that's where we're at right now. More questions than answers. But to go back to the point, why don't you fill us in where we're at in the regulatory process right now?
They're behind schedule by a few months, say, on permitting, applying for permits. No action was taken once they made their presentation to the communities. They kind of vaporized and the subject, you know, was deleted from any action. You know, for a while now, what they're doing is I always expected, it appears to be true, they needed new business names and they needed to actually become a business in Washington. So you mentioned High Test Silicon. Now there's also PacWest Silicon. And there's a bazillion PacWest corporations in Western United States. So this is their latest, apparently. I anticipate that they'll begin the permitting process now that they finally have their names. And of course, they're still raising capital to do all of this work. So we expect to see something there. The permitting process, even the Department of Ecology in Washington has stated, you know, publicly that it's extremely rare to deny permits to a corporation because they can always meet, you know, air quality standards. So as you say, it's not a fait accompli, but still, you have to make sure everybody understands what the impact is going to be. And it's because the air is so clean that it'll be easy for them to pass the permitting process. Now, the commission, the county commission, and of course there's input from the state, they have the ability to deny them an operational license here. But whether that happens, it depends a lot on what everybody does and how many people know, and especially out west in Olympia, and perhaps our governor, whoever that turns out to be, here. Butch was kind of against it, but he's on the way out. You know, he's not running the next term. So we've got some people
involved.
Could
be an issue in the next election.
It could be. Yeah,
yeah, it already has been in our local elections.
Yeah,
for sure. Sure, a lot of the folks that came out to vote last Tuesday were energized on this specific issue.
I hope so. Yeah.
That raises an interesting question, though. We are in Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
This project is occurring in Washington.
Right.
It's the Washington State regulatory agencies that really have purview over it. What kinds of things can our local elected representatives or even our governor do on this particular project?
Well, it's not as clear-cut as you might think. Yes, it is in Washington, and you would think they would have full control, but they don't, because it's obvious that all of the pollution, the air pollution, that is going to be blowing into Idaho. They're right on the border. The winds are always, almost always, from that direction. They'll be blowing out here. So we do have standing, and Idaho, you know, can make this a federal or at least a multi-state issue, you know, however you want to approach that. But because, you know, it affects us, you know, directly, yeah, we do have a say. People will say, well, it's in Washington. We can't do anything. It's not true. We can attack on a federal level to prevent this terrible thing from happening. So it's not, we're not alone. And especially, you know, there's thousands, the pollution, when Hytest admitted how much raw materials they'll be using, particularly the amount of coal, the coal is well known, the composition, the chemistry of it. It comes out of Kentucky, and it's a big commodity item for Kentucky. This thing's going to be emitting 2,500 gallons of acid, concentrated acid, into the atmosphere every day, 2,500 gallons. This is easy to figure out. You need high school chemistry and arithmetic to figure it out. And they've given us all the information we need to calculate these things, and we have. So, you know, it's 100 gallons an hour getting sprayed into the air. This is something that Idaho can really get angry about, because we have forestry, we have tourism, we have, of course, even Washington has ski resorts as well as us. The fishing, you know. All of this, and acid rain is a serious impact on the foliage, the soil. It all washes into the water. We have inversions in Washington, in Idaho, as well as Washington.
In particular, these types of emissions can create acid rain.
They absolutely do and mm-hmm. will. Mm-hmm. And they wash off the coating on the leaves of plants that makes it impossible for them to breathe. It washes into the soil, which then releases aluminum in the soil. This prevents the trees from taking up moisture and nutrients. Then it eventually washes into the rivers, and when it changes the pH there, the fish can't breed. Mm-hmm. So it's a pretty high impact.
Yeah, particularly, you know, a problem with lakes, actually.
Absolutely.
Those are more of a closed system.
Well, you were talking about the snow, and it's important for people to realize it's not just rain. It's acid snow and acid fog. Mm-hmm. And when the snow melts in the spring and all the acid from 24-hour-a-day operation starts washing into the water, of the lakes and so forth, you're going to see a serious impact from like a, you know, it's not just a little bit of acid every day going into the water. It's like an entire, you know, 6 months worth, say, suddenly melting and dropping in there. So you'll see significant, you know, effects. Mm.
If you're just joining us, this is 88.5 KRFY, the morning show with Chris and Susie. And we're speaking this morning with Bill Ellis. He is with the Citizens Against the Newport Silicon Smelter, also known as CANS. Bill, Susie, you got a question?
I just wanted to say, as you pointed out, no decisions have been made. There's not even a permit application in the works yet.
That's correct.
But the purpose of CANS, the mission is to stop it from happening. But the purpose is to bring public awareness, provide factual information, host informational meetings, and maintain a lawyer to aid in the fight.
That's right.
Is that what you're doing now? I know there's something coming up next Wednesday evening here in Sandpoint. Mm-hmm. It's probably more of an informational. It's called Anti-Smelter Sandpoint Volunteer Meeting. I'll just say it's Wednesday, May 30th, 6 p.m. to 7:30. It's at the Hotel Ruby in Ponderay on Highway 95.
Mm-hmm.
And so is that what this is all about? I mean, we invited you in to hear more.
We wanted to put it, you know, nip it in the bud. The old saying goes, if we wait till they've got the permits, you may as well give it up. So we want to make sure they know that we don't want them to be permitted. We don't want any concept that they're acceptable in any way here. Before a lot of money and a lot of political careers are on the line, you know, once people get committed, they're going to fight back, no matter whether it's a good idea or not, because it makes them look bad if they've made a poor decision, which is affecting commissioners, you know, and the PUD board members and so forth. This is a particular thing also for Sandpoint, because you may recall the variance with air quality here related to particulates in the air, dust, basically. That's my understanding from the mayor's presentation some weeks ago. This is going to bring trucks full of sand through Sandpoint. So this is the very reason that you were at variance with national air quality standards. Now you're going to bring trucks, three of them an hour, 16 hours a day, 5 days a week, throughout the year. And so these things are going to be not only kicking up dust. You think three trucks an hour is no big deal, but it really is when it's continuous all day, 16 hours a day, 5 days a week, three of them, and then they get backed up, at a traffic or, problem in some way. So you're going to see an impact right away here in Sandpoint. This isn't something that's too far away to bother you.
And the reason these trucks are coming through is because the silicon is actually mined in Canada.
It is, yeah.
And then it's coming down through a route that it actually doesn't even look like the most direct route to get down to us. But it must be faster, I guess.
There's 95. Yeah. And then 2 is where it peels off so that it gets it over towards the Newport area. So whether they bypass, Sandpoint or go, I doubt they'll go through it. That would be insane. But maybe, who knows what they're thinking. They've been closed-lipped about all their transportation. And, rail is a possibility out of for the coal to get here. But it's not much of a possibility yet for the sand. And they can do it with truck pretty easily.
So you're saying the permit has not been put in. Mm-hmm. And who is the permitting agent?
Really, this comes down to they'll have a PSD. That's an Environmental Department of Ecology thing called the Potential for Significant Deterioration in the Air Quality. You have to do one if you are emitting certain the top five emissions. That would be particles, nitrogen oxides, sulfur oxides, and so forth. So then you do one. And this demonstrates the facts that say, we will not exceed the standards of national ambient air quality. That means anywhere in the United States, basically, even if it's dirty, it's still good enough, In any case, then they move on, and the county kind of ends up with the final say. Obviously, they'll defer to state, suddenly Jay Inslee decides he really is an environmentalist, they might say, okay, maybe we won't permit this. But it is the county that has the authority to permit, the operation.
And so by the county, you mean the county commissioners?
That's right. Yeah.
And that's Ponderay County.
Ponderay County, Ponderay Washington. County.
But I think the main permitting agency is the Washington State Department of Ecology.
Only to the extent that they are meeting air quality standards.
Yeah, yeah. That's for the air quality. And then the permits to actually site the plant will come back to the county.
Yes. Well, they have to have a use permit. They have to rezone also the land that it's on right now. It's currently public land. It can't be industrial if it's public land. So they have to have a zoning meeting and maybe vote, depending on how the community feels. Mm-hmm. But sure, yeah, there's many more things to do, which is why we're in it now. If we can stop the zoning, that's the end of it. If we can stop the permitting process, that's the end of it.
So how are the folks, you're in Blanchard. How are the folks in Newport, who are the ones that really could influence the Ponderay County Commissioners, since they're the voters that put them in office? What's their posture in general on the silicon smelter?
Early on, it was a lot of Idaho people, probably 2-1. In the organization, because we were intimidated by the pollution aspect of it. We would get all of it, and Newport basically none of it.
We're downwind.
Yeah, we're downwind. But once we got going, and they began to see that these are not high-paying jobs by most standards, that there is going to be local pollution as well, not just the air pollution, and a whole lot of truck traffic. Then suddenly everybody's, we got a lot more people involved in it, and it looks like, I guess, we're about 50-50 now with Washington and Idaho participation. There's been a couple of local groups that have perhaps come and gone, but they got people motivated. And now a lot of Washington people are involved in CANS, I should say, as many as Idaho, because they have local issues. These jobs will only be about $17 an hour. For hourly people. They'll have some salaried positions, of course, but there really isn't that much in the way of great economic stimulation. All jobs are good. You'll have more McDonald's or whatever people spend their money on. I don't mean to say it that way, but whatever it is people buy, they go to the hardware store. So there'll be more money in the local area. But remember, this is still a Canadian company. So all the profits aren't going to be here. There's not some headquarters here that's going to be paying a bunch of high-paying jobs for administrative and finance and all that. This money all goes back to Canada. And basically investment bankers, that's who these people are. The company's only 5 years old. They've never built, designed, or operated a smelter. That's not to say they don't have people who have been involved in smelting, but this is just a finance organization, a banking organization, and they've seen an opportunity because all of this free money, and so they're moving here. And they will undoubtedly, this is just my opinion, they'll probably sell the thing after about 5 years to somebody who is in the smelting business, because after about 5 years, they will have recouped all of their tax money, you know, their subsidies and so forth will have been paid back to them by then.
So looking at the... it's actually called the PacWest Silicon website, PacWestSilicon.com. That's the website for the company. They're saying there will be 150 jobs, what they're calling new family wage jobs. I believe they're saying the average wage is going to be around $50,000. Mm-hmm. 250 to 400 construction jobs, which would be temporary. Mm-hmm. But they project that with 150 permanent new jobs, that there'd be up to 750 secondary jobs. That's the jobs that are created by people that help supply both the industry and all the people that are there to do it. So that's a pretty significant economic benefit to Ponderay County, it seems like.
It's a good guess might happen, in a perfect world.
Yeah, and then I guess the other thing, playing the devil's advocate here, the other part of the beneficial side of this is that it is smelting a metal that's used in solar panels. I've seen some projections that say, well, we are going to put a bunch of carbon dioxide up in the air, but it's going to be offset by the fact that we're creating a material that's used in creating solar power, generating solar power. So what would your answer be to that? That, this is something that we do need in the world. We do need to do more solar power generation. Where should that material come from?
Well, there's two things, of course. First of all, this material won't be used in solar panels or computer chips. It's too impure. It has to be sold to another company, a refinery such as REC in Moses Lake area. Which also has destroyed the economy in that area, even though it brought in all these jobs. The town is near bankrupt. It's not pure enough, so their material is not going into solar panels or computer chips. The next company in line is. Now, if you're going to count carbon credits, you've got to count the trucks that brought it here. You've got to count the diesel that was burned to mine it. And you've got to count, what happens later, because the next company in line who has to refine it will also contribute carbon. So that's just something nice to say. Someday our material will be in a solar panel. Less than 10% of all the silicon made ends up in a solar panel. So, and computer chips included. So that's not a big push. As far as jobs go, their lowest estimate has been 130 jobs that they've publicly mentioned. They have to stay above 100 or they start losing all of their subsidies. So they always say 100, over 100. If you look at other smelters that have been built recently, the 130 employee number is much more realistic. Of course, saying that you create another 750 jobs, is that what they said? That's just a big wild guess. They don't even know how many jobs they'll have in their building, much less what's going to be created in the local economy. And if everybody is coming from the surrounding five counties, it's not going to be our local counties that get this money or these jobs. You can pretty much say 30 jobs will be brought to Newport.
And looking at CANS, Citizens Against Newport Silicon Smelter, you also have some partners in this. And I'm just looking at your brochure. The Kalispell Tribe is one of them.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And what is their stand on this?
Well, they've come out generally against it, and pretty clearly so. In fact, they've pointed out the discrepancies in all of the land purchases and sales. They pointed out that it will affect their air quality too. They applied for a class one air quality rating to the EPA. The commissioners and officials from Washington went to the EPA and said, please don't grant them this because it will minimize our opportunity to bring jobs here. In other words, we need to be able to dirty up the air to bring jobs here. is what our locals said. And so, you know, class one, you know, air quality standards, the highest granted or recognized by the EPA. And they have that air quality now, the Kalispell tribe. Is one of the reasons, I suppose, that the smelter isn't going up to the Esk area where the power already is at the newsprint factory. And why they aren't, they're probably not going down to the, there's a couple of other locations. Addy was one of them, where they have previously had a smelter. So they've already dirtied up the place, but they don't get as much free money down there. So
there's a couple of things I just want to mention. You're saying the county commissioners, if the permit is applied for or and put in as an application, and it goes through all these things, the commissioners may be the final say.
That's right.
But there's a primary election coming up, and I don't know if any of the commissioners are up for election, but it could be, as it was in our primary election here in Idaho, on the questions that were asked by most of the people on in the local primary. And also, just again, to mention that understanding and knowing information is a important part of any decision making, and there is an anti-smelter Sandpoint volunteer meeting that's CANS next Wednesday, May 30th, 6 p.m. at the Hotel Ruby in Ponderay.
Yes. We have two people, by the way, who are going to be running in the primary, and this is for the PUD Commission. That would be Devin Beach. He's going to be running against, I believe, I'm not sure who. You'll have to forgive me there. But he is running for the PUD Commission, District 1. Cheryl Miller, also someone associated with CANS, is running for County Commissioner of Ponderay also. So we're not just stopping with a bunch of posters and leaflets. We've got some people that are motivated and want to try and make a difference.
How many Ponderay County Commissioners are up for election?
I can't say.
There's probably and they two seats, usually. The
I
way
think, yes,
set up
not
there.
All of them.
Yeah.
So
there is one anti-smelter or one candidate that's opposed to it that you know about that's going to be standing for election.
Yes. Cheryl will be. And I guess she's running, if I understand correctly. Forgive me, I just found out about this over the last couple of days. Mike Maness, I guess, is up for election. So I believe she's running for his seat.
Well, the bottom line comes down to get informed and get involved, register to vote. You can make a difference that way.
Yes.
And that's for in Ponderay County over in
Washington.
Eastern Washington.
That's correct.
And here in Sandpoint, or here in this part of Idaho, we haven't even talked about property values and the potential of the silicone smelter going in, but we really are almost out of time because we have another guest.
Sure.
But it's fascinating to hear about what CANS is doing, and CANS knows about the potential of this smelter going in.
Get on the website, the Facebook page also. You can find information. It's not all about a bunch of your time getting spent we're all busy. So it's not like everybody has to dedicate their lives to this. You know, a little bit of contribution in some way, sometimes money and sometimes your time. But each of our efforts, they're only temporary. We move on to new things that we have to do. So please get involved. I'm asking everybody. And talk. If they do a political day, a governor day up here, go and mention it. Talk about the smelter. They'll let you speak. You know, participate in your own, you know, community.
Okay, well, Bill Ellis with CANS, thank you for coming in today. And we're going to have to take a break because we do have another guest coming in, Tina Mauser. She's going to be talking about Breakfast for the Brave.
That's right. And thank you, Bill Ellis.
Thank you, Susie.
From CANS.
Thank you, Chris.
For coming in and talking to us. We're going to take a little musical break. This is The Hollies. It's called, the song is The Air That I Breathe. And we'll be right back with Tina Mauser from The Bridge and Breakfast for the Brave. Find out all about that. Stay with us. And that was The Hollies, The Air That I Breathe. And this is The Morning Show with Chris and Susie right here on 88.5 KRFY. And we have a new guest in the studio. We were just talking with the folks from CANS, but now we have Tina Mauser. And she's the director and of the bridge at Sandpoint, but we're here for a very special reason to hear about what, Tina, tell
Thank us. Thank you, Susie. I'm here today to talk about the Breakfast for the Brave. The bridge at Sandpoint, we're hosting a Breakfast for the Brave. It's going to be the last Friday of every month. Our first one is going to be on May 25th between the hours of 7:30 a.m. and 10 a.m. And that's where any of our community members that served or are actively serving in the armed forces can come to the bridge and receive breakfast. We just want to honor them and all that they've done for our country. And we support our military. And so this is something new we've started this month. Just so we can acknowledge those that in our community that has served in the military. So we're calling it the Breakfast for the Brave, and it will be between 7:30 a.m. and 10 a.m. on the last Friday of every month.
And where'd the idea for this come from?
Well, other facilities around the nation are doing breakfasts for military members that have served and are currently serving, and they called it Hungry Heroes. But I didn't want to call our veterans or our active members hungry heroes. I wanted to call them brave. And so that's where I developed the concept of Breakfast for the Brave.
Mm-hmm. So the Bridge at Sandpoint is an assisted living facility for our elder citizens. And they'll all eat together.
They will, yes. And normally breakfast is served from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. And some of our residents may come down at that 7 o'clock time period. But I felt 7:30 was more of a convenient time for people waking up and rolling out of bed to make it to the facility, to where the residents are already there because that's their home. So they can start at 7 a.m., but we'll start breakfast at 7:30 for the veterans.
And do you feel that your facility can handle the amount of veterans that may show up? Or do you have an idea? Do they call ahead and sign up?
Yes, we would like them to RSVP, and they are able to call 208-263-1524 and RSVP with either myself, Tina Mauser, my lifestyle director, Leanna Murray, or even the dietary service director, Holly Crace. And again, that number is 208-263-1524 to call an RSVP for a Breakfast for the Brave.
That'd be great, but you don't have to, or do you really want them to do that as a for sure thing?
You know, if you don't and you show up, I am going to feed you and I'm going to acknowledge you as one of our military members. And also, I would like to add, I would love for them to bring their spouse with them, their significant other, because truly, who wants to go to breakfast without their loved one or, you know? So bring your loved one with you and enjoy breakfast. I do believe we'll be able to host that many. And as we progress forward in the months to come, we'll be able to see what the turnout's going to be, but we're prepared to serve as many that come in.
This sounds like a perfect opportunity for someone if they wanted to come over to the bridge and help out as a volunteer, because your regular staff is going to be overwhelmed if a lot of people show up or even call to RSVP ahead of time.
Yes, absolutely. We would love to have volunteers. Volunteers is really what makes facilities run smoothly. It just is another piece to that portion of our elderly population. But when you hold events such as this, sometimes it can get overwhelming for your normal staff. I'll be personally flipping the flapjacks. So that tells you what the management team is going to be doing. All volunteers are welcome to assist. Absolutely.
Now, Tina, do you have a military background yourself?
Personally, I do not. I do come from a military family, though. My dad retired from the Navy. My oldest son was in the Navy, and my youngest son is attempting to get in the military. So we definitely believe in supporting and serving our country.
So just to be clear, what is for breakfast on Friday from 7:30 to 10 for our veterans, and it's called Breakfast for the Brave.
So this month's Breakfast for the Brave, we're going to serve hotcakes, sausage links, hash browns, and scrambled eggs. And obviously, we're going to have beverages such as coffee, tea, milk, juice.
That sounds really hearty.
Sounds good.
Yeah. And you'll be cooking yourself.
I will be flipping the flapjacks. Mm-hmm. That's right.
That'll be fun. And do the residents of the bridge know this is coming?
So some of them do, not all of them. Mm-hmm. It's something that, you know, often we try to do it, inform them the day before, because they may not remember mm-hmm. the day of if you let them know days out. So mm-hmm. we'll be informing all of the residents tomorrow. And they enjoy when people come into the facility and sit with them and talk.
Sure, I think they get a kick out of it.
Yes.
I bet you have some veterans that are staying there as well.
You know, I have a gentleman. He's a colonel, actually, and he's an amazing man. I have a pilot from the Air Force. I have several.
Were they involved in any of the wars?
The colonel I know was. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm not really sure about the others, unfortunately. I wish I did, but I know Colonel, and I can't say his name because of HIPAA, but mm-hmm. The Colonel definitely served mm-hmm. in many wars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're losing our World War II veterans now. That generation is really passing along. There, you have to be in your early 90s now to have served in World War II. So yeah. The greatest generation, they sure did a lot for our country. For the whole world.
I always think if you get the opportunity, sit down and have a chat with those folks, because their stories are not only important for us to hear, but it really helps. I think they love to tell the stories.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So another thing I want to point out is the Bridget Sandpoint Assisted Living is a vital underwriter for here at KRFY. So at this point in time, I just want to say thank you to the Bridge for continuing as an underwriter, and I know you play a large part in making that decision, Tina, so thank you.
Thank you for giving us the opportunity. We support our community.
Okay, so again, Breakfast with the Brave, it's this Friday, 7:30 a.m. to 10 a.m. It's going to be every last Friday of the month going forward. And you'd really like folks to RSVP, at least for these first few, while you get the feel for the numbers. And that number again for them to RSVP?
So to RSVP is 208-263-1524.
Okay. And that's to give a call ahead to let Tina know that you're going to be coming for Breakfast with the Brave.
Tina, thank you for coming in and letting us know about this. I know we tried to get, all of a sudden we got you in yesterday. and you're going to be coming to the membership drive and speaking a little bit more about the Bridge Assisted Living during our membership drive that's coming up June 8th and 9th. So it'll be nice to see you again during that time.
Thank you, Susie. Thank you, Chris, for having me. I appreciate it.
Have a beautiful day, and thanks for supporting and reaching out to our veterans with Breakfast for the Brave.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So we are just going to make a few announcements, and then we'll go out with a
We have kind of a big thing song coming up Friday as well. Mm-hmm. After you have breakfast, you can come to the Panada that night for another free event.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Rumble, and I don't have that information in front of me. Susie, why don't you?
I'm going to give you that information, Chris.
It's a film about the Indians who rocked the world, and it's talking about the indigenous peoples and the influence that they've had on all of our musical history, on jazz, blues, heavy metal, folk, pop music. You'll be kind of amazed to see some of the names that are actually indigenous or Native Americans who are have big names in the world of music and are trendsetters for our musical history.
I think we'll be very surprised. I'm kind of learning as I go here, but some of the iconic songs that we've heard all through our lives were really part of this picture that we'll be hearing. A lot of music. It's going to be a great movie, and it's free, and KRFY is doing this as a thank you to our community.
And that's at 7:30 p.m. this Friday, the May 25th, at the Panda Theater. Doors are going to open at 7. I should mention that it's very well rated. If you look at imdb.com, the people that have seen this really like it. It was also the winner of the Jury Award, the People's Jury Award, in the Sundance Music Film Festival. So that gives you an idea that the quality of the film is very high.
Very. And this was given to us, the film came to us through a grant from the Bonner County Human Rights Task Force. So we really want to thank them
also. Big shout out to them as well.
Mm-hmm.
So hope to see everybody at Rumble at the Panda Theater this Friday. And I hope our veterans will take advantage of the Breakfast for the Brave, also on Friday, 7:30 a.m. to 10 a.m. at the Bridge.
What a great community we live in, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
Also, tomorrow on the morning show, Jim and Jack, their guests will be Mike Bauer and Marcy Timlin from the East Bonner County Library. They're going to tell us about the grand opening, or the reopening, the grand reopening of the library that's coming up June 2nd.
Yeah, so, they're opening up the new expansion. That's going to be very exciting, too.
Yep.
Lots of things going on in our town.
Lots of things. Well, we're going to go out with a song. I was in Seattle, and I just have to say, I got to see Paul Simon and his farewell concert. It was amazing to be at the Key Arena with 20,000 fans and the class act. It was an amazing concert. But we're going to go out with one of my favorite songs, Simon and Garfunkel, Homeward Bound. We hope you have a beautiful day. Thanks for listening to The Morning Show. And stay tuned to Otto's Eclectic Mix all day till 5 o'clock.
Yeah, bye now.
Bye.